Hopefully we'll have about 10 minutes for questions at the end. I also have no financial relationships or commercial interests relevant to this presentation in the last 12 months or at any time to disclose. When you think about methods to understand risk and health in communities, socio-spatial methods are often used to understand the physical and social environmental contributors to health and to risk. In addition, mapping and photography really allow community members to create and present their definitions of community and risk. We also have more recently seen combined in these methods the use of epidemiologic data to provide a quantitative backdrop for understanding disease within communities. Individually, any of these methods can be used to guide interventions and direct services. However, we felt that the combination of both qualitative methods and quantitative methods may give a richer and more nuanced view of the impact of community context on health. So in this presentation, and as part of the larger study, we used community consultation, mapping, photography, and GIS analysis in triangulation to explore social and physical environmental contributors to HIV risk in rural minority communities. We used first a mapping exercise where we asked community advisory board members to map HIV hotspots in their communities, and also to identify potential sites for a mobile unit or HIV outreach. And this presentation is only focused on the HIV hotspots. We also asked community advisory members to take pictures of places, activities, and community characteristics that they associated with HIV transmission based on that mapping exercise. And in follow-up meetings, we used small groups, interviews, large, and then brought information back to the larger group through the use in a quasi-photo voice method using questions that were similar to the showed method of interviewing. And then individual interviews for those community advisory board members that either weren't able to be present at that meeting or that we wanted to follow up on specific themes that were of interest that emerged during that meeting. In our qualitative analysis, we use both an inductive and deductive approach to the analysis of the data, and then looked across individuals within the community advisory board, communities, and data sources. We triangulated these qualitative data with quantitative methods. The coordinates for HIV hotspots were identified using JUICE Analytic Excel Geocoder or Google Maps, and the GIS maps were constructed using ArcMap version 9.2. And these are some of the characteristics of our CAB members that participated in this project. Their mean age was 44. Their gender, we had 9 men and 5 women. A predominantly African-American community advisory board. We had 1 white, 1 Latino, and 1 multi-ethnic, one person that identified themselves as multi-ethnic, and a pretty highly educated group where 12 of our 14 CAB members that participated in this study had at least some college experience. Our CAB members mapped 16 hotspots across our 6 counties. And this is a Google Maps that shows these 16 hotspots. And you'll notice I think you can see it from there, I-95. Let me see my pointer. You'll notice I-95 that runs across here, 85, I-40, all major highways in our communities. And most of these were clustered, well, the counties that we're working with are clustered along 95, and most of these hotspots were clustered along 95. The themes of the photographs we categorized into these 5 themes, and I want to particularly point out one sub-theme that I thought was particularly relevant. The importance of geography in these communities, particularly along the I-95 corridor, the impact of community decay, and the aftermath of natural disasters. The issues of residential segregation and lack of resources or opportunities that concentrate risk, and apathy to collective action that we saw as a theme in our interviews that sort of go back to the issues of critical consciousness and Freirean theory. In terms of the importance of geography, the images and of the photographs highlighted really the impact of major thoroughfares in rural smaller communities. Many noted that the I-95 corridor, which you see here in this Google map, and result in truck stops, drug trafficking, and sex trade on this major highway, contributed to HIV risk in this communities, in these communities. They also noted that few businesses or industries that were still in these communities were actually located along these major roads as well. And CAB members noted that these commercial industries contributed to the epidemic in several ways. First, they noted that truck drivers from these areas needed to come into communities and during longer stay participate in the drug and sex trade. CAB members also noted that many of these industries were located along major roads, and that actually made it easier for people from other communities to come in and take the jobs in those communities. And then lastly, they noted the double-edged sword of college campuses that were often located along major thoroughfares in these communities. Again, first, pride in having out-of-state residents come to attain higher education in these communities, but also noted that these students contributed to HIV risk due to boredom and lack of other recreational outlets. So this hotspot, one of our CAB members took a picture of the I-95 marker, and they said that we're actually the middle point between Florida and New York, so a lot of tourists stop here on their way from the north to the south, and so we feel like that's part of the reason why our numbers for HIV and AIDS are so high. Under the theme of impact of community decay, all of the CAB members took images of abandoned buildings or buildings that had fallen in disrepair. Several talked about the impact of Hurricane Floyd in 1999 that devastated many of the neighborhoods in these communities and counties, and the residual impact of debris that was still evident 11 years later. Several also talked about the egress from the rural South of more recent generations of farming families, the impact of the community of families that had family farms but were no longer farming and had a negative economic impact on communities as well as a negative physical impact on those communities. CAB members noted that these families often kept the land but didn't live in the communities, and often the property and buildings would fall into disrepair, becoming quote-unquote an eyesore. They describe both the psychological consequences and the financial impact of these poorly kept residences. And they noted that many of the abandoned building properties were being used for illegal activities. In this picture, these are steps that went to a house that was destroyed during Hurricane Floyd. And this CAB member said, "I took a picture of this because this is where a house was after the flood. The house is removed, but there's still some debris. And we're talking 1999. But still, there's still some debris which don't make the community look as good as it should look. Maybe there could be some enforcement to get it cleaned up." In this picture, we use GIS data to map the percent vacant housing units, and this hotspot sits in one of the highest neighborhoods, one of the regions that has a high proportion of vacant housing units. And this is the picture of that abandoned building. And this CAB member said, "It's actually a picture on the corner from where I actually live. It's an abandoned apartment building. We don't live in what you would call a substandard neighborhood. It just goes to show that abandoned housing and all of this is affected in the entire city." And this is an older farmhouse that had fallen in disrepair. And this CAB member said, "A lot of the farms are overgrown and people aren't farming on them because while the land had been in the family for generations, the current generation didn't have any interest in farming." And these are a couple more pictures around that farmhouse. Our CAB members eloquently described the impact of residential segregation on concentrating HIV risk and the HIV epidemic in the South. This segregation was thought to stem in part from the flooding after Floyd, where local residents were displaced, and rebuilding of public housing was limited. They noted some communities, particularly mobile home or trailer parks, that and the continuing isolation that had a profound impact on concentrating risk for the residents of those communities. Residential segregation in these low-income areas was coincident with no recreational outlets or any other financial, no access to groceries or other necessities. The physical isolation coupled with the overall economic decline in these counties has led to a bartering system where sex and drugs are traded as a means of accessing goods and services or paying bills. Countering the need for the views on residential segregation and concentrated risk, several CAB members actually took pictures of railroad tracks that bisected cities or counties, and they described that while they described the resultant economic impact of these geographic markers and reminders of residential segregation, they also noted that the barriers were permeable, that leading to bridging of risk groups between counties and parts of the city. In this image, we have population density, where the darker colors represent higher density, and we also have recreational outlets is what we mapped on this. And you see that they're concentrated in probably what would be considered some of the larger communities. We have one hotspot here that's where there are no recreational outlets around. And this is of a trailer park in that community. This particular trailer park is between 5 to 7 miles away from anything else, so it's not like there's going to be any access to any type of recreation or grocery or anything like that. So I'm pretty sure there's a lot of bartering and trading out there. People barter for what they need. It's usually sex and drugs, but sex and drugs can get you food, can get your rent paid, can get you pretty much anything you need. In this GIS, we use GIS data here to map the proportion of African Americans. Rocky Mount is a twin city. These railroad tracks bisect the city and correspond to the county lines for Edgecombe and Nash counties. The Edgecombe side has a higher density of African Americans, and also has lower. And the Nash side actually has higher economic attainment. And in this picture is a picture of the railroad tracks here. And this CAB member said one part of our city is Edgecombe County and the other part is Nash County. Edgecombe has a really high transmission rate. People from Edgecombe County travel over to Nash. And so I was trying to depict that although we're a city divided, we still come together in terms of HIV and AIDS because, you know, it's walking, it's movable. We also saw that residents describe that sort of two ends of the spectrum in terms of ability to address these changes. They described an apathy in the community as well as the beginnings and the emergence of civic engagement to make changes. They felt that the combination of concentrated poverty and lack of economic opportunity and degradation of physical surroundings had led to an acceptance by some community members in some parts of the community of existing conditions. They noted a divestment of law enforcement and civil society in addressing the safety of community residents, which was captured by several community members' photographs. However, several CAB members also noted that there seemed to be some examples of citizens' groups that had started to address these issues. And this is one image from a CAB member, and you'll see here in the picture that this is a church and this is a school, or I think this is a church and maybe this is the school, and here you have the school crossing here. And they said, I took a picture to show the proximity of the largest church in this city, Pine Tops, and the elementary school. But at the same time, right behind the elementary school and the church is probably the most drug activity in the city. And His concern was that there had been no effort by the school board or the church to address this. And this is a picture of a park that this CAB member took. And they said, I took this picture because this used to be Riverside Trailer Park, the trailer park where everything that could go on went on. But after the flood, they didn't build it back because the citizens didn't want this park back. They pushed for this park not to come back, and it was a very big mobile home park. So that's one thing that did come out of this. In conclusion, we felt that this triangulation of mapping, photographic, and GIS methods really more accurately demonstrated the importance of a layered approach to understanding the contributors to HIV risk in rural minority communities. This methodology allowed for community members to provide insight into transmission settings and really to enrich their narrative and visual perspectives with existing census and other data about the setting. As we draw to the end of this presentation, I wanted to acknowledge our funders. And I almost said most importantly, our community advisory board members who were tremendous in helping us work through all of these data. Our community partners in the area, Amanda Henley, who's our GIS librarian, who was instrumental in helping us get the maps together, and then the other members of our research team. And we're open for questions now. Thank you. We have about 10 minutes for questions. Y'all still tired from your walk? Okay, well, if there are no questions, we'll stay here until 10. And, you know, if you want to talk with us one-on-one, we're here. Yes, you have one? You all want to address that? Do you all want to answer that? Well, I can say, being from the Northeast and being from having grown up in an urban area and doing most of my training in an urban area during the early parts of the HIV epidemic, that some of the issues are the same and are cross-cutting, and I would absolutely agree with you. In some ways, I think of that there's been sort of an evolution in this epidemic, that where different parts of the country are at different stages of that evolution, and where the profound stigma that I saw in the 80s in New York City is very comparable to the profound stigma that I see now in North Carolina. And that sort of ebbed, I always get those mixed up. It's sort of, other things have become equally or more important in more urban areas in terms of framing the epidemic for individuals that are living with HIV and AIDS. Whereas that, the voice of the people that we were interviewing was HIV-related stigma, internalized enacted stigma, and community-level stigma was really quite profound, and I had not seen that level since leaving, since the epidemic in the early part of the 80s.
I think there are some contextual differences as well related to the moralism that's associated to being infected with HIV in the South that doesn't necessarily pervasive in some of the more urban areas. We are in the Bible Belt. Everything has morals attached to it. We don't talk about sex. It doesn't happen in the South. I think that and the behaviors that are associated, or risk behaviors that are associated with HIV infection, are much more highly stigmatized. And I think some of our data, we actually have people who had migrated from the North to the South who were HIV positive, who talked about how different their experience was in accessing care and dealing with their support network, and how that was much more sheltered, and they didn't have the openness to deal with and live with their condition as they did when they were living in more urban areas. So I think that there are a lot of shared issues, but there are some contextual factors that are very unique to South.
I just wanted to add one other thing. We just finished just writing up our retention data over the last, 15 years, since the study started in 1994. And though there's lots of things that sound very familiar to what you've written here, though drug use and some other issues were part of it that are not, that were factors for the poor retention in early visits, later visits, what was very striking is that African American women did much better than Latinos and whites and stayed in this study. And
that's good.
Interesting. Encourage you.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah. We thought about.
Great. Thank you. Well, as I said, we'll stay here till 10 if you all are shy about asking questions. Thanks again for coming and for taking the time to come this long way.